Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Can a goal scorer complete a brace? What do you do with knackered dark horses? Who exactly are England fans clamouring for now? How quickly can you become that man at a major tournament? Is Hal Robson-Kanu the first punditry mercenary? And the art of player ratings? Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £1 a month for 6 months. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 76 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me first of all is David Walker. How's your wall chart going?
Well, I mean, those of you who listen to the podcast but don't follow me on Twitter, which is, I imagine, probably almost all of you, won't know that I posted in the week saying that I'd lost the pen that I started filling the wall chart in with midway through, which caused me something of an existential crisis. I couldn't find it, so I had to just plow on. Annoyingly, I do now have the wall chart half and half filled in with two different pens. And the latest woe that I am experiencing with the wall chart is now we're getting to the stage, obviously, where we're recording this after Italy, Wales and that Group A games concluding. I've got to actually write on the wall chart, like properly write it, not just numbers. You can fill out the groups, put the names in for the next round. And there's not a great deal of space in the box for the teams for the next round. And I've got quite big letters and that stressed me out a bit. And also the wall isn't very even. The surface isn't very even.
That's really unsatisfying.
See, the pen that I lost was like a felt tip and that was perfect, but I'm now using a biro and it's...
Biro and a hard surface. I feel that. It's a very unsatisfying sensation. First question for you then today. The sight of a team subbing their goalkeeper off in the 89th minute for no urgent reason, is that the sign of a two-bob international tournament?
It's not great, is it? Just, I don't know, just makes a mockery of the whole thing really, doesn't it?
Agreed. Absolutely no reason for Italy to be getting there. Old number two goalkeeper on in the 89th minute. I'm told that the theory behind it was that Roberto Mancini has vivid memories of going to a tournament and not playing a single minute and didn't want that to happen to his goalkeeper. So presumably this was the least riskiest moment for him to give him a minute. Behind this mentality or not?
I'm not behind it in general. I didn't like it. It didn't sit well with me seeing that keeper come on in the last minute, along with a raft of of other subs from both teams. It's very much strayed into international friendly territory. Mm. But if that is the theory from Mancini, fair enough. But then presumably he's going to have to put the other keeper on at some point.
I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work. But so it doesn't sit right with you, but I presume it doesn't leave a bitter taste in your mouth. They haven't gone that far.
No.
No, okay. Just
mildly annoyed.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, alongside you is James Moore. James, on Friday night, Airtricity League outfit Bray Wanderers tweeted, "And another. Joe Doyle completes his brace in injury time." James, can you complete a brace?
I don't think you can. To me, the completion kind of alludes to something that a player is set out to do. And I'm not an elite sportsman, so I'm not kind of into all that kind of visualization stuff, obviously. I don't think any player pictures himself scoring twice. You know, you might imagine one particular goal that you're going to score and visualize every element of that and how you're going to do it. Or if you're really ambitious, you're going to kind of visualize yourself scoring a hat trick. Fine. But I don't think you visualize yourself scoring twice. No, like when you're a kid growing up, you don't imagine scoring two goals in the FA Cup final, do you? You score the winner or you score a hat trick. And to me, I kind of feel like to complete a thing in this sense, you need to have set out to do it, and no one is setting out to score two goals in the game.
This is very good. But I didn't expect you to go down the kind of player-centric route. Dave, what's your opinion on this? I think, I think about it, the more I can't quite explain what my issue is with it. I mean, it's just that maybe just braces aren't a thing. They're just incidental, whereas a hat-trick is a packaged thing that you complete. I don't think I could really put it into words either.
I think James is correct, and I think you're right that the word incidental is correct. It's a thing that just happens. Hmm. You scored one. That's just a man scoring a goal, or a woman. And they scored another one. Oh, and it's all of a sudden they've got a brace. But if they've got two goals and there's time left to complete the hat-trick is a proper thing that we'll all be, as soon as the second goal goes in and there's enough time left, you know, we're all thinking about, oh, that person's on a hat-trick. I think the brace is just something, it's just a nice thing that happens. If you score two goals, oh, well done, you've bagged a brace. You've not completed it because I think James is right. You're not setting out to do it in the first place because it's not really that important.
The term brace was definitely a thing that was coined between someone coming up with the word goal and someone coming up with the word hat trick. And then it decided they needed to describe the thing in between.
You can only assume so. I mean, yeah, we're getting close to this, definitely. It's just that maybe they are essentially equal. They're similar concepts, a brace and a hat trick. They describe a number of goals, but the hat-trick is just so prestigious and so established, and the brace isn't, that it isn't there to be completed. But no, fair play to Bray Wanderers. They held their hands up straight away without any prompting from anybody. But yeah, bagged, yes. Completed, no. But on to Euro 2020 matters, Dave. Italy versus Wales on Sunday evening. A curious game for many reasons. First of all, the delightful revelation that Italy have held on to their unofficial World Football Championship title. I really like this concept. I really like this concept that journalist Paul Brown created, that he traced the kind of boxing-style World Championship all the way back to the first ever win in international football when Scotland beat England in 1873. And the title's been sort of passed along ever since. And I just think it's a really sound concept. I don't think it should ever be the official way of doing things, but I really like it. I really like it. It should be kind of welcomed by FIFA as a thing. They should have a belt or something for it.
In the same way that Tyson Fury proclaims himself to be the lineal world champion of boxing because he lost his titles due to his ban and all that sort of thing. Yeah, I completely agree. It is interesting. I looked on the Wikipedia page earlier on and Scotland are top. Like, I mean, they're not the lineal world champion in this sense, but they, in terms of winning the most amount of games,
championship games, you know, where the title was on the line, but that's very late 19th century heavy.
Just because they were the first ones.
So they just got a lot of defences in early doors. But it's a very thorough Wikipedia page, James. I mean, it lists all the defences that Italy have had over the last sort of 20 games or so and all their top scorers in that period, which is something I would never need to know. I would never need to know this, but I'm so glad that someone takes it this seriously.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that, you're really only going to look at, like, you know, when you're suffering from insomnia or something, like, and you can't sleep and you've looked at all the other more interesting parts of Wikipedia. And like you say, it's kind of one of those things that I'm not interested, but I'm glad someone's done
it. I completely agree. Well done to Paul Brown and those who've carried it on. Elsewhere in this game, Dave, much more minor matters. The perennially satisfying moment when a manager has to control the ball in his own technical area when it drops from the sky. That man, of course, was Roberto Mancini. And the sort of manager you want the ball to fall to in these circumstances. And a great shot of him controlling this ball. It was coming straight at him in the air. And he sort of backpedaled like a striker would, you know, really, really controlled. And his first touch was kind of like raising his leg behind him with kind of outside of his boot, keeping it within his playing distance. It was all very, very stylish. And of course, it got the kind of Mancini still got it kind of chat. But it made me think, if that ball had fallen for Robert Page, or Rob Page, as some may call him, what element of his game would require him to still have it?
Well, I've watched Robert Page a lot during his career, as he was a Watford captain of many seasons, and it would either be he'd have to completely lose all his senses and just be overtaken with the moment and the excitement, in the same way that if the ball ever was to fall to you in the crowd and you have the opportunity to line it up and go for the header, I think that's what he'd do. I think he'd think, okay, I could catch it and give it back to the fullback, but actually, this is mine. I'm going to go for it. Pages! And then
The shout as well. No, we joke, but I genuinely would love to see a manager do that. Although I sense it might be a booking, like given the distances that may be involved, you'd probably get booked for it.
But Mancini, everyone was giving Mancini praise for that because, I mean, you know, oh, look at him. He's so stylish, isn't he? In his nice blazer and his nice tie. But, you know, as if, yeah, all right, get over it. He's Italian. He looks good. Yeah. Okay. But he didn't quite. It was so nearly perfect. He controlled it, but it sort of didn't go to the plate. It actually hit into his back. Like, it was just so close to being brilliant, but actually it wasn't quite perfect.
I'm glad you said that, Dave, because I actually thought it was rubbish and everyone was going on about it. If it had been in a game, he would have lost the ball.
Absolutely right.
Do you remember there was
absolutely
one?
Absolutely right.
I think it was Dragan Stojkovic, and I can't think where
Japan,
he was managing.
Believe,
it might have been in Japan, but there was one where he like volleyed it from the technical area, like into the goal, like come from kind of 50 or 60 yards away. Do that or
no,
do
absolutely
nothing at
right.
all.
So many questions about this. But first of all, James, I've noticed a pattern of behaviour here that whenever managers do this, and whilst I realise they are in the heat of battle when this happens, it's a very similar concept to when goalkeepers save penalties. They don't, there's no joy. Why do they remain so stern-faced after they've done it? As if, yeah, so what? I don't like it.
It's false modesty,
yes,
isn't it?
Completely.
It's the same false modesty. They're absolutely desperate for like all the coaching staff to kind of pat them on the back. And there was someone there on the Italian coaching staff kind of applauding ludicrously. It's just sycophancy, isn't it? It's pathetic.
I mean, all part of this scene, Dave, is that Mancini is this increasingly ludicrous figure. There's a limit to how cool one man can be, and I think he has reached it and passed it.
Yeah, where do we stand on the way that he casually holds the jacket over the shoulder in the post-match interview? For me, I think that's a step too far.
I don't like it.
That was so ostentatious, that was one of those things done entirely with Twitter in mind, wasn't it? He must have known. That's what that was all about.
Have you ever done that? Like on the holiday or even on a hot day or something? You've taken the jacket out because you're not sure if it's going to necessarily be hot enough to not wear the jacket. And you've got the jacket and you think, well, I could have it over the arm, but I'll just try it on the shoulder. And within seconds, you know, I can't do this. It's ridiculous.
All of your body says this is not a comfortable way to hold your jacket. And plus, as you say, with the added thing of this is just going to make me look like a dick. And obviously Mancini can carry it off, but I couldn't. But how many fingers do you employ in the collar of the coat?
I would go for a grip myself. I would go for thumb and index finger.
Interesting. Not using your fingers as a...
I think that's a risk. That's a crease risk.
Yes. Yes, it is. You'd be squashing the material, surely.
All these reasons are why we should never do it. Ever again.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, in Group A, James, some spectacular dark horsing of Turkey. I mean, I admit to being duped here. I was well and truly duped by the dark horsing of Turkey pre-tournament. But I put it to you that that duping is very easily done. I mean, if I said to you that Country X are a brilliant team, they're one of the favourites for the tournament, you would probably fact check it either in your brain or elsewhere. You'd say, I'm not sure about this. I don't think they're good. Similarly, if I said this team are rubbish, they are going to stink the place out, you would have said, I don't think they're that bad. But the thing is with dark horses, it's this implication that I know something that you don't, and you just have to go, oh, okay, interesting. Oh, well, I'll keep an eye out for them. So dark horsing is kind of this extension of the old concept of football hipsterdom, where it's kind of just this kind of, well, I won't question you because I sense that you probably know something.
Well, yeah, I mean, quite aside from the fact that more or less everyone thought they were going to do well, so therefore they weren't really dark horses, were they? Because everyone just thought they were going to do well.
Okay.
But it seemed to, I don't know whether this thing kind of spread like...
It did.
like a sort of Chinese whispers thing? Like one person said, but and I know for a fact that our colleague Michael Cox said that they were going to do well. I remember reading him having written that. And I wonder whether, I'm not suggesting he started it, but what one person says they might do okay, then that becomes like three or four people down the line, oh, they're going to do really well. They're going to get to their semi-finals. And then suddenly everyone's saying his team are going to be like in an outside chance of winning it. Yeah. And like, I mean, when was the last time you watched a Turkish Super League game? I mean, I can't even think. The only bit of Turkish football I've seen in the last few years is that Demba Ba goal against Man United. That's it. I've not seen any other Turkish football. There's no reason to think that they were going to do well. I mean, it's bizarre, really, when you think about it. I got caught up in that completely. And I thought, oh, yeah, I could see Turkey winning the opening. You know, we did a prediction thing in the office. And I was like, oh, Turkey, Italy looked quite good. But I think Turkey could win that opening game.
Yeah.
For no reason. Other than people like Michael Cox
how much do we pay this guy? He hasn't got a clue. He does not know the game.
It's ludicrous.
I completely got taken in by Coxy as well. Doing his podcast, listening to his reasons, and he was talking about Yilmaz, the striker that's had a really good season in France, his last ever tournament, and a couple of young players.
Absolute cart horse, by the way.
Playing it, yeah, absolutely terrible. And didn't look like scoring at any point, really, apart from one chance near the end against Italy.
He's scored 40 goals a season every season for the last 20 years, and every time I watched him play,
to the point where I put money on them, I put an each way bet on them to win the tournament, I was completely taken in by it. The moment that I was concerned was when the dark horse-dom reached Alan Shearer. In the preview show, I think, or the first game, Shearer was like, well, Turkey are a good team. And I thought, you know, with all due respect to Alan Shearer, I just don't know if he's watched them recently. I think he's listened to he's probably read Michael Cox's piece, who he respects, and completely has made a sound decision to back Coxy and go with Turkey. And then I thought, oh, I'm not sure if Shearer's going on national TV and backing Turkey, I'm a bit concerned now. Mm. And so it proved disastrous.
Yeah, I mean, they ended up in the semi-finals, my predictor, and there's no logic to it whatsoever.
Do you think this happened in other countries, or was it just in England? Was it just us? Well, I'd be curious to know whether people in other countries are kind of taken in by this as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely.
What's the German word for dark horse?
Oh, GCSE German flooding in. Can I do it? No, I can't. But no, James, you're definitely onto something here. It's definitely a kind of Chinese whispers aspect of this. You're absolutely right. I need to return very briefly to Italy versus Wales, Dave, because Jamie Stringer writes in about Italy's goal, and he says, can we get a ruling on excellent work? Italy lead through a goal from Pessina after excellent work from Verratti, according to the commentator. I'm not sure a free kick qualifies as excellent work. Now, Dave, he's obviously completely right here, but the next natural question this podcast must ask is, what constitutes excellent work or great work?
I think it requires... you've got to do like more than one thing in a movement. You know, beating a player and making a pass, or taking the ball down and releasing it in one go. Like doing something that's more than one action. It's a body of work. It's a small, tiny little body of work that we appreciate. It's not just a good pass on its own or a set piece delivery.
Good start, good foundation here. James, talk me through great work or excellent work that leads to a goal.
I think there probably needs to be some element of it being like slightly off the cuff. And I guess with like a free kick routine, it's presumably a thing they practice on the training ground. So the work they've done there has already occurred in the training ground, right? So I think with this, the work has already been done, and you know, it would require some kind of moment of ingenuity to qualify.
Okay. Well, my theory is that the clue here lies in the word work, and this isn't necessarily about creativity necessarily. I think it's about running with the ball running with the ball a certain distance. And I would say it's predominantly in a wide area as well. After great work from Aaron Lennon or something like that, you know, really running the channels and progressing the ball either a certain distance and or past one or two players. So I, what I'm saying is he's the player who set that goal up, as Dave suggests, has to progress the play maybe one or two stages, from... it not being a potential goal to very much being a goal. So doing a lot of the build-up himself.
They've almost done the work. They've done the work of two players.
Yeah, you've done the work here already. I'm essentially just finishing it off. I mean, yeah, I basically just repeated what you said, which is fun, isn't it? Yes. A very good point, a very good question, but I think we can all agree that set pieces could never, ever be defined as excellent work before a goal. Thank you, Jamie Stringer. Thank you very much. James, important issue now, clamour watch, because the dust has settled on England 0, Scotland 0. Who are we clamouring for now? I don't think I'm entirely sure.
I think it is just still inexplicably Grealish, despite him, one, having actually come on, and two, not really doing that much when he did come on. And the thing that really struck me on Friday night, and I'm, maybe this has happened before, but I just don't really remember it in an England game. Like, the clamour now starts on social media like 20 minutes into the match. Now, before it would be, you know, 6:06 that evening, or like, you know, opinion pieces in the next morning.
Paper, so live clamouring.
But now
live,
it's like
clamouring.
Real
time clamouring.
Exactly. Minute by minute clamouring. And it'll be 20 minutes into the game. And, you know, occasionally a TV commentator will reference Twitter. Actually, they won't say Twitter, although they'll social say on media social media.
Like they do on towers.
Chatter on social media. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, yeah, you can see the clamour could actually come into the kind of mainstream media experience of the game. So yeah, I think it is Grealish now, isn't it? Sancho, weirdly, it is the kind of, Sancho's the dark horse, the clamour dark horse.
Yeah,
I think
Sancho, he's the hipster choice. Yeah, exactly, he's hipster clamour.
How do you think? I just feel like we're just between clamouring stools at the moment. I mean, Grealish came on, but he didn't start, so there's technically still clamouring left for that, Dave. But I do believe the clamouring has started, so I think we've overlapped our clamouring, which is possibly unheard of for England at a major tournament.
But there's no doubt, and James is completely right, that Grealish is still very much your mainstream clamour. Your average man with, or again, women with flags on their cars is still clamouring for Grealish. But there are particular people.
Is there a growing clamour? A growing clamour.
There's a very quietly growing clamour for Sancho. Going, you know, you do know that he's one of the best players in the Bundesliga, don't you? And you know, Calvin Phillips has never played in the Champions League, and he's on the pitch, and there's all the like, you know. And I'm not disagreeing with any of these people. I think Sancho's an excellent player, and I personally would at least get him on the pitch at some point, just give him a go. But I think Grealish is still, he's still the one.
Grealish is going to, we're recording this at 9 o'clock on Sunday evening, and so we haven't seen Monday morning's papers. But I will predict now, Jack Grealish's face will appear on 2/3 of England's tabloid newspapers, or actually any newspapers. He'll be on the back of all the papers, won't he? It'll be, all the chat will be about Jack Grealish. Adam, can I put something to you quickly? So you can have a clamour to get a player into a team, but can you have a clamour to get a player out of a team?
No.
Because if so, there's definitely a clamour for Harry Kane to be.
No, I mean the same sentiment, level of sentiment exists, but simply the word clamour cannot be used to remove a player from a team. I mean, there are hard and fast rules here. You've seen enough tournaments, you know this. You know, I need to...
Well, this is why I've come to you.
No, it's fine. You're absolutely right. I need to do some very quick calculations for my next observation. I've never had to do this before, so I don't know how.
It sounds like high-end.
No, it's not the maths. It's the mechanics of working it out. I'm nearly done. The thing about Grealish, Dave, I mean, we could be at the peak of the Grealish clamour for reasons already mentioned. But I should point out that Grealish's name contains 71.4% of the letters in the word unleash. And we know that...
That's worth waiting for, isn't it?
And we know that unleash is the calling card of the clamour.
But he has been unleashed, as James alluded to already.
He got unleashing from the start.
That's fully unleashed, isn't it? The people clamouring for Grealish will use that in their defence to say, oh, but he didn't get to start, and the game was, you know, Scotland had already dropped too deep by that point, and, you know, he didn't have enough time to influence the game. He had half an hour. Didn't actually have enough time to do something.
Well, this is important because, he was introduced as a sub and didn't change the game and didn't set the world alight. So, I mean, if anything, the clamouring should lessen. He's already been unleashed partially, didn't impress, so the full unleashing isn't going to make any difference. This isn't like Owen 98, where he changed the game against Romania and was then, the urge was to unleash him in the next game. So I think we're in a real clamouring crisis, James, quite frankly. I don't think we know what we're doing.
No, I mean, I suppose that's what comes with having decent young players at your disposal. This isn't a situation that really England have been in too often, is it? The clamour has always been for one player. It's always been quite binary, hasn't it? There's basically been an 11, and then there's been one guy on the outside who people are suggesting to be coming in. Now there seem to be kind of three or four different options. We're going to come to a very left field one in a minute, I think, from a friend, yep. Mr. Keys. And yeah, I mean, it does. I don't know. Maybe that means it won't be Grealish on the back pages. Maybe there'll be some differing opinions.
Yeah, maybe we are ready to move on to Sancho. We're certainly ready to move on in this podcast, at least. Yes, make sure that you clamour accurately, because inaccurate clamouring, as we're about to find out, could land you in hot water.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So many hot takes about England at the moment, Dave, but I think it's time for us to check in with our friends in the land of hot takes, which is beIN Sports. A few things to share from the last few days. I think this collection of words were inevitable at one stage or another in this tournament. This is the beIN Sports crew talking about France's equaliser against Hungary, which was generated via a huge launch upfield from Hugo Lloris, and well, the inevitable happened.
Sam Allardyce had been in charge of the French team this afternoon.
No,
and his goalkeeper had done that.
But we've seen Alisson do it. But we've seen Ederson do it.
Yeah, I guarantee you.
No, it's not like
had. It. I guarantee you. There's a difference here, Rich. I guarantee you, had France been 1-0 up, Lloris wouldn't have done that.
No chance.
Why does Sam Allardyce keep landing himself in these theoretical situations, James?
All I can think of at the moment is how much wine the French Sam Allardyce would drink.
Don't you dare say pint of wine. You know it's banned from this podcast. It didn't happen. It didn't happen.
Yeah, but come on.
No chance. Dave's a good warm-up there for Keys and Gray in this section. Keys really laying it on the line straight away there, which is really good.
I did like the voice you could hear just in the middle of that, the voice of reason was poor little Gianfranco Zola, just trying to kind of calm everything down, because he sort of knew what was happening, probably felt a bit like, you know, a bit awkward because he's the sort of, you know, the foreign representative on the panel.
Mm.
But yeah. And Kesey also trying to justify it. Isn't that a cultural thing?
Zola has the most thankless punditry task of Euro 2020. What I particularly like about Zola's role, I mean, in any of the clips I've seen, Dave, I haven't seen him speak. And it's just Andy Gray sort of turning to him and explaining something. As if they've just had a sort of their cars have collided in Rome, and Andy Gray's got out and tried to explain the situation to this Italian guy, and the whole thing is very unseemly, of course. But the debate escalated post England Scotland as they looked ahead to the Czech Republic game, and the prevailing hot take of all, which was that Harry Kane should be dropped. Here's how that debate went. This was Paul Robinson trying to defend Harry Kane in a fairly logical way, and Richard Keys was just not having it.
He's the captain. He's the goal scorer.
He's
the
way
captain.
Off.
He's not at his best at the moment. I don't think he's been at his best since the whole transfer saga started at Tottenham, since he put the transfer request in. I don't think he finished the season particularly well at Tottenham.
Two games he's been taken off in. One, of course, England were winning, and you'd argue to save him for this afternoon. But he was taken off there because he wasn't performing, wasn't
he? Yeah, he's not at his best. Like I said, he didn't finish the season strongly. And
so why have you got to start him when you've got so many other options?
Because he's your captain, he's your goal scorer, and he will score a goal. You're going to need him for the rest of the tournament. You take him out now, you lose him for the tournament. You don't take your captain out of the team just because he's played.
He's contributed
he's
nothing.
He's played averagely once.
Sorry, that reminds me of that bit. Is it the day today? where Chris Morris says, "Michael, you've added nothing." It's very Chris Morris.
David, it was genuinely tense, wasn't it?
He's contributed nothing. Key's like a, you know, like a low key barrister or something, completely trying to take apart Robinson's well meaning defence of his fellow professional. I mean, Key's, you know, really on sparkling form there.
I think my favourite bit was when Paul Robinson sort of calmly said, "Yeah, I've said that. I know, I've said that. I've pointed that out already. It's fine. I just want to let me carry on." But he's contributed nothing. I'm going to say that later in this podcast at one of you when you haven't spoken for about 2 minutes. the England debate continued. Gray stuck his oar in as well. And this is frankly quite brilliant. I said a few minutes ago, never inaccurately clamour and... well, this could be the result.
Argument to leave him out, it's who you leave him out for and how you want to play. I mean, you could go Sterling up top.
No, you could. You go Watkins or you go Calvert-Lewin. You go a centre-forward that's got a bit of life about him at the moment and a little bit of energy. And
surely Sterling offers you that. Because if you put Sterling there, you could get Grealish in the team.
No.
There's an option. It's an option.
If you put Sterling there and I'm Calvert-Lewin or Watkins.
Yeah.
Gareth, can we have a word,
like,
please?
How you want to play,
though, isn't it? Well, he's not going to change dramatically the way they play, surely, mid-tournament. He's not going to flip it and play totally different.
Are you saying Calvert-Lewin and Kane, more of a like-for-like?
Yeah, and Watkins, more of a front man, more of a focal point, reference point.
Anybody like that? We're using that. I mean, he's not there. I know
anyway,
Watkins, but we're
I'm
using
just
that
waiting
as an
the
example.
Wee man.
Someone
can,
like that.
I can hear his...
There's a bit, if you watch the video, then the listeners might not have seen this. There's a bit where you can see Richard Keys looking off camera just past Andy Gray and nodding his head just before he says, "Obviously, we mean people like Watkins."
Yeah. You can almost hear the producer in his ear going, "Richard, he's not in the squad."
Yeah, such a lovely little nod he gives. He says, "Yeah, I know. I mean, this is a cheap shot from us. It is. I mean, they've mistaken the fact that Ollie Watkins is in the England squad, and that's fine. It's not an easy mistake to make. It's actually quite a hard mistake to make, but a mistake nonetheless. My favourite part of this clip, Dave, is Andy Gray knocking on his table as if he's knocking on the manager's door.
Because
that's Gray, isn't it? That's visceral. Like, he really wants to ram home the point, and he wanted to knock on the manager's door, and he's done it.
Absolutely. As if, I mean, I suppose Gareth Southgate does have an office at St George's Park. The players probably could go and knock on his door if they really wanted to. Is Ollie Watkins actually still there? Are these players still knocking about? Maybe he could actually still do it.
But Ollie Watkins knocking on his door saying, "Well, you could have picked me."
He'd just be asking for a chat. He wouldn't be able, I don't think he'd be going in saying, "Can I play?" Because he would know he's not in the squad, but maybe he just wants to go and see everything okay, Gareth, you all right?
This has made me think that, James, I mean, the little I know about St George's Park, I suspect it's very kind of nouveau office environment. I don't think we're talking about wood paneled doors here that you can knock on and then someone sort of opens the door and summons you in. I think it's all very kind of, you know, open plan, glass. And you basically just have to wave at the door. You wave at Gareth Southgate through the door saying, can we just... Five minutes?
Yeah, I imagine so. And I imagine Gareth Southgate being a real beckoner as well. I think if he saw someone outside, lurking outside his office, he'd be very quick to kind of wave them in a casual way. Probably got his feet up on the desk, you know, very relaxed. I don't see him being too huffy about who he likes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So if anyone listening did find that us picking on the Ollie Watkins shout was a cheap shot, I don't care. There'll be something in that clip that you genuinely love, no matter what it is.
I've got one question about the all three of the Be In Sports clips and others that I've heard during this period. Is, have they got the aircon on too loud?
Yeah, yes.
Why is there just big sound of like massive air blowing it? Maybe it's a COVID thing. I don't know, but it's audibly loud.
They have a quandary there because, like, they want to show off their air conditioning. They famously love to show off their air conditioning in Qatar for the World Cup. Maybe they're just, I don't know. Do we want people to know it's air conditioned or not? Maybe it's the issue they've got. But yeah, there is one clip where it's...
Could be man-made clouds, I guess.
A couple of bits of correspondence from our listeners. First of all, James... God knows how to read out this username, but I'll give it a try. It's Ariaga 2 season. He says, "Has anybody ever become that man as quickly as Patrick Schick? Does the rate of that manification speed up at major international tournaments?" My initial answer is yes, it does. We're talking about a condensed atmosphere, condensed competitive atmosphere.
Yeah.
Well, we're suddenly turning into Keys here. No. The gestation period for that manning in an international tournament is obviously much less than, say, the Premier League.
Yeah, you need the rhythm of big contributions, don't you? And, you know, given you get a big game every kind of 4 or 5 days in the group stage, you score in the first two matches, then you're already there, aren't you?
And then obviously amplified, Dave, by the fact he scored from 50 yards. He's firmly that. I can't think of another that man in this tournament.
I think if he didn't score in the previous game, though, against Croatia, then his that man status could potentially have been in jeopardy. But the fact that he kept himself on the score sheet, he was involved in an incident. He, you know, got smashed in the face, didn't he, before scoring the penalty. So he's still very much still that man.
Yeah, he's been in and around our consciousness, hasn't he? Mm. I'm looking at some potential other that men. Ronaldo, I think, James, we can rule out. Cristiano Ronaldo will never be a that man. He could be a who else but.
He's more than a man, isn't he?
Sort of thing, or, you know.
Is Lukaku a that man?
I'd say he's probably past that as well, isn't he?
Too well known.
Yeah, agreed. Then you've got Ciro Immobile, Manuel Locatelli. Manuel Locatelli could be a that man.
What about...
You need to score in multiple games, don't you?
Clearly. Robin Gersens, the German fullback for the game of his life against Portugal.
I mean, what's his name? Dumfries for Holland scored in both games, didn't he? Was that... I don't know. It feels a bit different for a fullback, doesn't it? Like a rampaging fullback doing it twice. It feels like that's not
quite what you're looking for. No, I think it's okay. Gosens and Dumfries, but they will need to do it in either their final group game or the last 16, I would say, to become that men. But it'd be very nice to see fullbacks getting in on the act when it comes to that manning. Mixed up my goal scoring metaphors there, you may see. Next up, Dave, Patrick B asks how Robson Kanu has jumped ship from BBC to ITV before the group stage is even out. Has a pundit ever done that before? I don't know, but I can't imagine it's been out of the question.
I can't think of any examples of that. There has been an awful lot of different Welsh pundits. It's not like BBC and ITV have just gone for, right, we're going to have Hartson and ITV, we're going to have Robson Kanu. I've seen Joe Ledley on today, Robert Earnshaw,
Neil
Hartson's
Taylor,
on the commentary. Yeah. Neil Taylor's been involved.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've got Savage on the BBC. Like, there's loads of them. All over the place.
I mean, okay, we're not sure if it's ever happened before, James, but I mean, how do you feel about it? It feels wrong, doesn't it? It feels wrong.
Yeah, I mean, especially going from the BBC to ITV. I mean, that is
not Mo Johnston.
Isn't it? That's an act of treason. Yeah, it does seem strange. I mean, you know, when you're kind of signed up to one of these broadcasters and you're part of all their kind of pre-tournament literature and whatever, and it's, you know, all made a big deal of. I mean, what's happened there? Has he not made the cut for that? Is he there while he watches? Has he not? Was he knocking on the door, the director general's door, didn't get an answer, so he's gone down
good,
to ITV?
Good,
I mean,
good. I don't really understand the metaphor. Very good. I hope it turns out he hasn't paid his license fee or something like that, and it turned out to be a real scandal, and he's just ITV at heart. I don't know.
Well, the question is, I mean, now they're through to the successfully through to the knockout stage. I don't know which broadcaster has got or had the Wales knockout game, but where will he appear? Will he jump back over the fence if the BBC get the next game? Because they're going to want him because he
absolute
is the man
mercenary.
Who scored
absolute
that goal.
Mercenary.
He
all
was
that
man in 2016. He was that man, Al Robson Kanu.
Yeah.
Wait, so you think he's going to turn back and go?
He's clearly a free agent.
He'll be on BN Sports next week. No. Hal, a Cruyff turn in your area, in the penalty area at that time. No. Ollie Watkins wouldn't do that. So, yeah, that's Euro 2020 matters over and done with. Dave, in the aftermath of England versus Scotland, there was a bombardment of content. A familiar favourite jumped out, which I hadn't really absorbed for a while. This is the first example of it I'd read properly for a while, and it's player rating. I'm fascinated by player ratings as a kind of... I mean, they're wildly popular. I mean, they're well known to get clicks. I don't want to disparage it, but they are good for page views, player ratings, because they, you know, they're a very simple concept and they play on your instant reaction impulse. But I've never really sort of thought about the mechanics of a player rating, because I've never had to do them myself, so I don't really know whether it's a laborious thing or not. But there must be certain rules to it. Like, there must be sort of like, what's your benchmark? I mean, for example, do players start on a 5 or a 6 in your book?
I'm trying to think the last time that I read player ratings. It would have been a new... I don't think I've ever read one online. I think, right, it's for me, player ratings, very much sidebar of the newspaper sort of thing. But when I think of the starting point, I do sort of go to... I go to Football Manager for reference. Mm. And I think they all start on 6 in that, I think. Okay. I think 6 is like your bog standard. He's not done anything wrong, but he's not done anything good sort of thing. But 5 would make sense, being the midpoint of the... you know, of the 0 to 10 situation. So it's confusing. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think Football Manager has a lot to answer for, isn't it, James? I mean, 5 is a perfectly reasonable number to be out of 10 in the grand scheme of things, but 6 has now become average. 6 is now the average, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it's a rare act of the British football media giving people a bit of a chance and not just hammering them straight away,
up and knock them down. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, some questions from our listeners then. We've covered that first one from Polenium, but Adam Gray says, a player can come on as a 90th minute sub, James, not touch the ball and still get 6 out of 10. He's right, you know. He's right.
But not put, foot, not put concept, a foot wrong.
But the key thing is they don't have to provide an explanation, because in the bits in the newspaper, you've obviously got the little, you know, 6-word justification for the score. But then when the subs are on, it's just the name and the number.
Yeah. Made little impact.
It's an afterthought.
Made little, came on too late to make any impact. Is a set of words that's been used so often near deadline in a newspaper over the last 25 years, I swear. Dave, once again, Doug LaFrench says, half a point off for something bad, half a point on for something good. Start off at 6 points. Isn't that the universal rule on player rating? I mean, let's agree that we're starting on 6. What are the first things that can take a chip off that or add something to it? What are we talking? Scoring a goal presumably is going to add like 1 or 2.
I think if you score a goal, you've gone from 6 to 8 pretty quickly. But Doug mentions the 0.5 there, which is, again, is a championship manager, you know, thing, if you know, but I don't think it's a newspaper thing. I don't think I've ever seen a 0.5 in a newspaper, unless I'm mistaken. It's very much we are going solid numbers only.
I think
things that could knock you off could be, you know, succession of misplaced passes, missing an obvious chance, terrible tackle that leaves, you know, anything bad, visibly bad. Because I could be wrong here, but I don't think the people compiling these ratings are obsessively looking over the data. I don't think they're calling up Tom Warville to look at the pass completion stats. It's a very much, and I think this is a good thing, it's very much an eye test. This is what I kind of think based on what I've seen and what I feel.
Yeah, I mean, James, I guess if you're doing player ratings, there must be a point in the match where you think, oh, okay, this is going to be pretty easy. And then you just think, oh shit, I haven't done Tyrone Mings. What did Tyrone Mings do? And then suddenly you start panicking, thinking about all the things you might have done in the game.
I mean, that's probably where this 6 thing comes from, isn't it? Right? You want to go slightly in the middle, but you've not
just
really been
case.
Paying that much attention to what Tyrone Mings has been doing. So you think, well, I don't want to give him a 5 in case he's been good and I've just not noticed. So I'll give him a 6, give him benefit of the doubt, and then kind of move on to Jack Grealish, who I'm giving.
Right. I mean, not to labour this point, but I mean, the cultural baggage between 5 and 6 is probably higher than any other digit of the player rating system. I mean, I can't think of something that would annoy people more than someone getting a 5 when they deserved a 6.
So I think the cultural modern day equivalent, right, because I imagine in like the 80s or the 90s or whatever, you probably would have had top players, because they obviously all had the journalist phone numbers back then, as we're always told, would have like called up so-and-so from the Daily Mail and said, a 5? You're giving me a 5?
Yeah.
Whereas today, the only thing they get annoyed about is this, the old FIFA thing, isn't it? What, 73 pace? No, I'm easily 78, aren't I?
Apparently self-aware, but not really. Social media posts say, oh, it's all a bit of a joke, but they're actually really pissed off about it.
If there is one football-related YouTube video I'm guaranteed not to watch, it is a player reacting to his FIFA ratings. It's just definitely not going to happen. I do not care. James, on this theme, I mean, it would appear to me that player ratings are a very serious job, undertaken very seriously and rigorously. But sometimes the occasion demands it all goes out the window and we end up with cartoonish numbers. Ross FJ suggests that if a team wins an important match, say England versus Germany 2001, all players get a 10. How do you feel about that behaviour? Is it a bit?
I can imagine that the Sun would have done that night. I mean, I think that's fair enough. I think for a big sort of national team performance, you know, in a game, an emphatic win like that in a big match, I think
it's kind of a greater than the sum of its parts situation.
Yeah, exactly. It's a national occasion, a win like that. I don't think you want, you know, I don't think you want to get too bogged down by, you know, Nick Barmby misplacing a few passes and, you know, not really contributing that much off the ball, 6 out of 10.
As much as, you know, I love David Seaman and, you know, very much enjoyed his appearance on last week's podcast. I don't think you can give him 10 if he's conceded a goal. 9, but I think the goal conceding...
9.5 according to Doug.
Yeah, I'd love to see the justification for giving David Seaman a 10 in that game, actually. I mean, they would have had to muddle something together, definitely. An offshoot of this, James, is the pre-match player ratings. Now, this is done much less often. This is for big games like European Cup finals or FA Cup finals back in the day, where they would rate the players out of 10 for their kind of medium-term kind of achievements for their club, and then they would total it up at the end to compare the teams. It was a comparison thing, like see how these two teams match up. And it was always very suspiciously close. Like, oh, and then I couldn't help myself. I would go back through the teams and find, okay, where have they engineered a point off here? And De Bruyne are a six, just so they get it closer. You're both looking at me very blankly. Have neither of you seen this phenomenon before?
I don't think I have. That seems like a sort of antiquated version of the kind of clickbait era thing of combined 11s.
Yes.
There's a North London derby and you get, the balance of power has swung in North London. So you put nine Spurs players in to kind of prove a point. There's only two Arsenal players
right.
in there.
It's a forerunner to the combined 11. But no, Dave, I come to you with cap in hand. Newspapers used to do this. All our listeners, 90% of our listeners shouting and saying, yes, they did. They did. And it was suspiciously close afterwards.
No, I honestly haven't got a clue what you're talking about.
Quite frankly, I thought this situation might happen quite a lot more on this podcast. So this is a collector's item, a welcome collector's item. But trust me, everybody, it did happen, and it was oddly engineered to be close. On a final note then, Dave, there is a major international tournament going on, but of course there is a transfer window that's open right now, and things are going on. There was a transfer rumour this week. I have to say, I can't remember the details of it, but it was essentially club linked to a player who's probably way out of their league. And it brought the inevitable responses on Twitter. And I feel like there is a system here that's adhered to. The kind of sarcastic, I'm keen on unlikely event X, but I don't think that's going to happen either. And it usually revolves around a date with a very famous pretty lady, doesn't it? And what I'm trying to get at here is, what is the chronology of this? I put it to you that it started off with Cindy Crawford, which is like at least one generation older than us. And then it probably peaked again in the sort of Twitter era with Beyonce. And then I don't know who it's moved on to.
So you put this in our WhatsApp group earlier on, which gave me some time to think about this. And I don't know if Beyonce ever really would have been in that envelope. I think Cindy Crawford, certainly. I can see my dad saying the Cindy Crawford line. I think in the 90s, I could definitely imagine Pamela Anderson being absolutely nailed on for this when she was at a Baywatch sort of height.
But in her Baywatch pomp.
Yeah, very absolutely.
And then Baywatch pomp. Brilliant.
I think maybe it's a quite interesting thing to think about this, though, because producer Phil, who's about 5-6 years younger than some of us, he said Megan Fox sprung to mind for him. Mm. She was obviously, the first Transformers movie was probably sort of quite a huge cultural star then. But nowadays, and maybe this is probably a good thing, because I don't feel like we have that same sort of pin-up girl that's sort of held up in like the tabloid sort of culture that is like the one that we should all fancy. It's just, it's just not really as much of a thing anymore. But then also producer AD, he did mention Kim Kardashian. So she probably is as close as we've got to that sort of figure. But I certainly wouldn't say that. I would never go, I'd fancy a date with Kim Kardashian. And that's not going
to
happen, mate.
Why does it have to be a date with anybody at all? There are other unachievable things in life that we could attain to.
Yeah, exactly.
Why does it have to be so seedy? Why does the metaphor have to be so seedy?
Yeah, it is an incredibly 90s thing. I mean, it does kind of all seem quite Partridge now. And, it's ironic that we're taking the piss out of Richard Keys. It's definitely very much a thing in his realm, isn't it, that?
I'd like to be CEO of my own company, but that's not going to happen. Or I'd like to win the lottery. Just do money things, it's a bit more neutral, It's 2021. I did fear that this was going to be something where you'd look blankly at me. At least that didn't happen. You're both...
This is definitely a concept I'm familiar with, but I'm not really sure what to place it. Because you don't hear people saying, I'd like to, set up a successful app in Silicon Valley and make a reasonable amount of money, most of which I then lose to, an awkward divorce.
Yes, convoluted, but would still work. Dave, it's a very similar concept to like in soaps where someone looks a bit worse for wear and they say, you look like you've gone 10 rounds with Mike Tyson. I feel like Tyson's going to hold on to this for a long, long time. I can't see anyone sort of taking it off him.
100%, because what the modern day equivalent, who's the most famous boxer in the world, Floyd Mayweather, probably, evidently, like average men have gone 12 rounds with him recently and come out for it okay.
You're absolutely right. Joshua's kind of lost his aura. I don't know, Tyson Fury doesn't feel like the same. Anyway, a very important thing for us to have nailed down, the sarcastic responses to unlikely transfer rumours. I'm really delighted we've nailed that. Tremendous, by the way. Thanks very much to you, Dave, for joining us. Enjoy your week.
Thank you.
Likewise, James, let's hope that clamouring clears and we have clarity on the clamouring by...
No, I disagree. Clamour away.
You want
away.
The clamouring to continue?
Yeah, it's the only interesting thing that's going
on. Well, hopefully we'll have a definitive overview of the clamouring landscape by Thursday's episode. Thanks for everyone for listening. We'll see you on Thursday in a podcast sense. Cheerio.
It's contributed He's nothing. Played.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.